Hey everyone, and welcome to the O Studio podcast, where we delve into the art of feeling better. My name is Tim Bateman, founder of O Studio, a New Zealand wellness franchise that's here to help you relax, recover, and improve your health and well-being. Today, Soph, Maddie, and I chat about men. Well, more specifically, we address some of the dire problems today's men are facing in the health and wellness space. Why are so many more men attempting suicide? Why do so many men find it hard to genuinely look after themselves? We all have important men in our lives, so this episode is for everyone. I really hope you take something meaningful away, and as always, I hope you enjoy. Welcome to another episode of the O Studio podcast, and today we're talking about men and well-being, and this is quite an interesting one because actually, it's kind of come off the back of feedback from some of our other episodes where listeners have sort of said, like, you know, my husband needs this or my dad needs this, but he just won't engage or listen to anything to do with well-being. And, you know, he's happy to work his hands to the bone, but he's not interested in doing anything to take care of himself. And which is interesting for us, right? And so we started to look into it. And Sophie found some pretty scary stats about men in New Zealand.
Absolutely. I think it was more scary for me looking at it as a sister with three brothers that I love very, very much. And obviously dad and lots of uncles. And I'm thinking of, you know, I've got a 9-year-old, 10-year-old son. And the sort of more I dug, the more upsetting it was. So just to run over a few that were hard hitters was, suicide is the biggest killer of people under the age of 35 and the biggest killer of men under the age of 50. So it's bigger than any other cause of death. 1 in 8 New Zealand men will experience serious depression during their lifetime. In New Zealand, the suicide rate for men is 3 times that of women. But we still experience huge barriers for men engaging in their own mental health awareness. And I was really just left thinking, why? And this purely comes off the fact, I think of, you know, my own husband and my brothers have probably moved into the space as the space has kind of grown and evolved. But as I went outside of that circle, there's a huge amounts of people that I love and care about that, again, have never stepped foot into this kind of portion of health.
Yeah, and more so actually resent it, right?
Yeah, so and no way. Kind of feel like it's absolutely not for them. It's not a space they belong in. I thought we definitely should pick away at our thoughts around why that is. And the more we picked, the more we were like, wow, this is actually, it's big for us, obviously, in the industry that we're in, but it's also big for our families and the men in our lives that we care about. Excited to see where this goes.
It's funny for me, even for me in this, like I found this, like I was like, are we really doing a men and wellbeing podcast? You know, it's almost like I'm in this, you know, you know, this is my whole life. And even I was slightly hesitant around it. I don't know why. I think we sort of, in unpacking where we're going to go today, I think I got a bit more of an understanding around why, and it's something around that sort of sign of weakness or sign of like, you know, that it's not a male thing and sort of ignoring it, you know, but the more that you spoke to me about this stuff and the more we chatted about it, Maddie, I was like, look, this is perfect because the reality is, you know, there are men in all of our lives, you know, there are, you know, close, far, and all of us out there are impacted by men in positive ways and negative ways, I'm sure, out there as well. But I think what we all want is happy, healthy men.
Living men, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what we all want, yeah.
Yeah, and we found more research that sort of, you know, talked about why on earth men don't want to talk about this or address it. And the most common reasons were these. I've learned to deal with it, which is not supported by the statistics, if we're honest. I don't laugh about that, but, you know, it seems false. I don't wish to be a burden to anyone. I'm too embarrassed. There's a negative stigma around this type of thing. I don't want to admit I need support. I don't want to appear weak. And I have no one to talk to. As a guy, I can see those things. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think I've maybe said those things, but it's a, you know,
you can imagine that coming out of the mouth of your dad or your uncle or your brother or someone that maybe sort of doesn't seem themselves.
100%. And I think that's the big one. I think in the podcast it pops up quite a bit that I'm thinking about dad, but it is the men that are just grafting and grinding. And I think of conversations right from when we're kids around mum trying to encourage dad to do something that'd be good for him. Like I think hydration was the most simple form of dad is sort of almost like opposed to just hydrating with anything like water. Like he'll drink coffee, but it just seems like someone's inflicting a pain if they're being like, Matt, have a glass of water. And I think it is the deeper we dug into this, the preconceived ideas I had why that was and like why dad would be opposed to practicing, you know, something like breath work and meditation or drinking a glass of water. I loved what we found, to be fair. So it moves actually into this next body of text that I will sort of...
Before you go into that, like I just want to drill into a couple of things within that, what Maddie just talked about now, but like I've learned to deal with it. I don't want to be a burden to anyone. Like for me, it hits home so much because it's like, and with a lot of men that I know too, the last thing you want to ever appear to be is a burden, or the last thing you ever want to be is a burden to your partner or a burden to your family in any way. You know, we've got this thing in us where we want to be strong, we want to support, we want to provide, we want to protect. And so anything that shows any sort of sign of weakness is, or any sort of sign of that I need more support or I need more help, it just cuts to the core of what you're trying to be, you know. And you know, looking into a little bit more too, it is a natural response to how we are now. You know, if you think about evolution of men and thousands and thousands of years ago, like the job was to protect, you know, bigger structures, you know, they're the ones that were out, you know, protecting and fighting and stuff. And so protecting your family and protecting your community and protecting, you know, what you have was sort of super important back then, you know, and making sure that your family was safe, you know, and provided for was super important because that's what had to happen. Whereas obviously as times have changed, we don't need that anymore. You know, we're absolutely not out fighting men, we're not having, you know, we've got, you know, happily, we've got everyone working in society, male and female, that are contributing to help happy, healthy families. Yeah. But we've got this still in us somewhere. I think it is off the back of evolution. I think it's off the back of the way we've evolved. But it's such a challenge to overcome.
Yeah,
it's
and the real, different, it's you know? Different programming in the brain as well, isn't it? The roles were different, and so the brain has, you know, developed and expanded in different ways. And this isn't broad spectrum saying every man feels like this and every woman feels like that. We absolutely appreciate there's huge variances in the way that the masculine and feminine traits are displayed in the world. But I think the core concept that you're talking about there is that men feel the need, they think that they're there to graft and grind and to look after and to support. They're not to be looked after and supported. So looking at an industry like wellbeing, it all becomes apparent, oh, that's not for me, that's for my partner and my children potentially, but I'm not to be looked after and I'm not to be supported because that's my role.
That's so sad.
And it's amazing. So they did this huge study. And it was a big, big study, and they got a whole lot of men and women in, and they asked them a question, what are the reasons that men aren't engaging in their health? So this is physical and mental health, and I think some of the conversations around dad, trying to get dad to the doctor, he's got much better in his later years, but early years, unless something was absolutely hanging off or clearly bone-breaking the skin, he's not going to a doctor. And I think even when he did go to the doctor, I mean, remember the time he broke his leg and the cast was on for sort of 2 weeks too long, and he's just cut it off himself. Because it's just like he wanted to get back to being the full version of him. You know, the cast was a sign that something was weak.
My granddad had a heart attack and then just drove himself to the doctor. And he took the dog with him as well.
Oh, that's
so
nice.
So we couldn't go anywhere without the dog.
But it is. It's a, you know, that's a, but so they got these people in and they were like, what are the reasons? And the first session came back with the very stereotypical thoughts around males' attitudes towards health care. So they were like, oh, it's because they're macho. They don't care about their own health and they lack taking responsibility for it. So those three statements were kind of supported by the room, men and women. They were thinking this is a macho, hyper-masculine thing. I don't need to. This has something to do with a tough guy situation. That they don't care, which was the next one, and then that they lack taking responsibility. But the second session uncovered, I think, what we probably are all in agreement that this is the issue that I think is the deeper issue. And it's very much that the research showed that there's a delicate balance between men, employment, and being a provider to their family or the people they care about. They talked about how these factors were linked to men's self-esteem, their self-image, and importantly, how men viewed health as presenting a threat to continued employment and subsequently a risk to their self-perceptions as an earner and provider. So those three statements at the beginning in that first session, they still exist, but they exist because of this next layer of things. It's actually, you know, it's a vulnerability and a fear to be exposed as something that's perceived as a weakness.
Yeah.
And I think it made me really sad, really digging into this, thinking far out. This, you know, all of the campaigns that we see currently around men's mental health, it is that real... they're still appealing to that real harden up, tough guy, that it's something that's kind of a tangible emotion that most men are consciously choosing to feel, whereas I think this issue lies a little bit deeper. The barriers lie in that they're actually afraid of, you know, opening this door into a space that could potentially make them feel or look vulnerable.
Do you think that's a justifiable fear?
I think it's a justifiable fear. But I also don't think it's a logical fear when we scrape away at it.
I love
it's absolutely
that.
Justifiable.
That's what I feel too. It's like, okay, like it's a justifiable fear because of, you know, the way we are, or the way we've evolved, but it's not logical anymore.
Yeah.
And so we need to drop that. You know, we need to find ways to drop that. And it's easy to say.
Absolutely.
It's easy to say, don't worry about that. Yeah. You know, it's not a sign. You know, it's like I even think about the way I've always discussed O Studio. You know, the way I've always discussed O Studio has, I've always sort of put it across as a performance lens. I'm doing this to perform. I'm doing this to be better so that I can provide more support and more stability and more safety, you know, all that sort of stuff. It's like so I can be a better athlete or a better dad. Mm-hmm. And so even the way I've leant into this area has been, you know, I've almost ignored what it really is. I've sat at that top level. I haven't sort of dropped down into the real level. You know what I mean? And so... that's the way I'm feeling and that's the way I've sort of experienced things. Of course, there's going to be a lot of others out there. I know I just want to reiterate your point before too, like everyone is different. We're not putting, painting a brush that everyone's the same here, but.
There's a spectrum of this, but I think the conclusion we came to from that study was very much that men engaging and looking after their well-being seems to compromise their ability to be a man, which I think was the biggest like, whoa moment.
Well, be a
for
provider.
Us.
Be a provider.
Yeah. That's because they anchored their masculinity almost to being a provider.
Yeah.
So it's almost like they think that's their core value and role in the world. And I think of that, we mentioned him actually in the Float podcast. The lovely man in the 60s who came into Float and he probably felt like he didn't belong here. Kids have got him the float. He goes in, he comes out and he's had the emotion sort of stirred in him. And his key takeaway was, I don't need to be everything for everyone. And it's a similar thing. It's almost like a light bulb moment and heartbreaking that he's got into his 60s and is only just realizing that. And as a wife and a mum and a sister and a daughter and a niece, I very much think it is, it was sad for me to think that I'm not doing enough to dismantle this feeling that I need to be, you know, provided for or looked after.
Well, I think it's hard to dismantle because it's as we talked about before, it's ingrained evolutionary into us, you know, and it makes sense, right, to be a provider. And if you were a provider, I'm not an evolutionary biologist, but I would, you know, it makes sense to think that if you were strong and a provider and stability, your genes got continued because your family were able to feel safe and they're able to, your kids were able to grow up, your genes were able to go on and keep going. And if you weren't stable, if you weren't solid, if you weren't a provider for your family, then, you know, your family probably sort of less of a chance of surviving, your genes, you know, continuing down the line. And, you know, I think about what we've just said, which is, you know, men engaging and looking after their well-being compromises their ability to be a provider. But I think it's actually the opposite of that. I think that, you know, in order to be able to provide, you actually need to prioritize your well-being. You know, like we talk about that, you know, the cup thing, right? It's like it's really hard to pour from an empty cup. If your cup's full, you know, and overflowing, it's a lot easier to provide support, stability, and things for other people. And, you know, it's the airplane thing, right? You know, put on your mask before you put on someone else's.
Just so I know we're all speaking about the same thing here too. When we're talking about provider, we're not just talking about financial provider.
No.
You know, that's something I want to make clear too. It's like the provider of emotional
safety
and security and like that's you know, just to make that clear
that's
too.
Good that you made that clear actually, because I can see how that would sound like that. Yeah, so we're not saying provider as in financial
needs.
It's just
your ability to show up, you know, like and
be present.
Yeah. Not be stressed out, you know, at home, because that's probably not conducive to a great environment for your family, you know. Like, and I think, you know, the research shows that, I mean, it sounds, you know, maybe obvious, and the research shows that we're not doing this type of thing, but it also shows us that, you know, if you're not prioritizing health and well-being, that you're more likely to be depressed, more likely to be unhappy, more likely to be suicidal. And, you know, like, you're not much of a fucking provider if you're unhappy, miserable, or, you know, hanging from the roof of the garage.
Exactly. That's exactly it. And I think that's the thing that scared me the most, is those stats frighteningly high and increasing, but also disproportionate to other cause of death. It's outrageous. Yeah. And I think it's obviously incredibly heartbreaking for any families that have gone through this, and there's obviously many of them. And it's not that anyone is to blame for the societal, you know, the culture that we've got, but I think it's probably a responsibility for all of us and as individuals to take on this, you know, looking at it through a different lens and seeing if we can have these conversations. But for both of you, have you ever felt like that? Have you ever felt the onerous pressure at any point of your life? Because those stats very much say, you know, 15 to 25-year-old males, I don't know if this is the primary cause of suicide, but we know that fear and lack of optimism would be a catalyst for, you know, that is an option to take. But have you ever felt that onerous pressure?
I don't really feel like I was a provider until, you know, we had responsibilities, serious responsibilities. When I say responsibilities, I mean like mortgages and kids and, you know, like things to be responsible for. And I think after that, I certainly, you know, thinking about this as we planned for this, I certainly would have, you know, if something was to happen to me, that's the immediate thing I would think about. Like if I, you know, like if I was got terminally ill, the first thought, and I'm not trying to be a hero or say anything, this is honest, but I would think about like the kids, you know, and like, and not Sally secondary, but like the kids, and be like, how's it going to affect them? How are they going to, you know, they're still going to be able to go and do the things they want in their life. And I don't think that's unusual, maybe, you know. And so I guess how I feel maybe almost confirms that research. I think about the problem differently. Mm. You know, I don't have I don't feel like I can't do things that look after me, but I would be concerned if something happened to me, that the first fear I would have would be about my ability to fulfill what I would say is my role.
Yeah.
Which is to.
And it's almost that you don't think about, you think about the problem in the same way, but you think about the solution differently.
Yeah.
So yours is almost like you're aware of that body of thinking and you share those emotions, but the way that you would actually approach it is by engaging in practices of well-being or looking after yourself, just to preserve your mental and physical health.
Yeah.
To be there as long as possible.
Yeah.
For the girls and Sal.
Yeah, totally. What about you?
Like, I think this has probably affected me a lot more than I would like to, you know, way more than I would like to think. You know, I was 19 when we had Shiloh, and I remember like walking around the house at night time with a crowbar because I was terrified that someone was outside, you know, like, and I still remember like making, or just decisions that I've made along the way too, around making sure that our family was going to be, you know, looked after and provided for. I think it probably has, you know, like it probably did change a lot of me, I think. As I said, more than probably I have thought about, but, and so I get it. I get this one more than anything here is I really get this feeling of like, you just want to be the right person for your family, you know what I mean? And so, and any sign of weakness or any sign of like, you know, I don't need, you know, any like cry for help is like, I'm not that. You know, it is not that, you know, it just by its very nature. And it's like, so as I mentioned, like there's a genuine reason why the stats are here the way they are, because I, you know, I can feel that too. And I'm not, you know, I'm fine. I'm getting a little bit emotional there too, because, you know, I know there's been times that have been more challenging, but there's a reason why this is the way that is. And there's a reason why we have more females comfortable coming into O Studio.
You know,
because you know, I don't think they have that. I mean, once again, we're a massive generalization here. Mm-hmm. I know everyone's different, but just in general, that sense of like, I need to be everything, you know, is heavy for a lot of people.
And I think I can see that in older males as well. When I think about like my granddad.
Yeah.
You know, like, and, you know, like older males that I've grown up with, I see that, you know, it makes sense now. It almost validates some of the behaviour that they saw. You know, yeah. Like my granddad driving himself to the doctor while he's having a heart attack. Yeah. It's like because he didn't want to, you know, scare my nan probably.
Yep.
You know?
Absolutely there.
You know, like, and maybe he wouldn't be able to articulate that unless he really thought about it. Yeah. But, like, I think somewhere in there that would be why.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, because he knew that she
wouldn't
would
want
be,
Nan
she
to
would,
see him
yeah, yeah.
weak
yeah.
almost
yeah,
or
yeah.
vulnerable.
Yeah.
And yeah. that's, I think, oh, that's actually made me distracted because Tim got emotional. But I feel like that's what I, when we were looking at this, obviously I heavily look at this through a lens of being a woman, not a man, but it is genuinely the concept of, I don't love the idea that men feel like they aren't to be supported and looked after. And like Tim is a probably prime example. He's a very, very hard person to support or look after because it does feel like it challenges your sense of ability.
Mm.
Whereas, that's a whole other thing. Like you've probably started with a responsibility in a core age window of your life where these emotions are probably really heightened. And it becomes complicating. It's almost competing against itself. It's like if I am vulnerable here, I'm going to be weak everywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the thinking, it's anchoring their values and their personality.
Yeah.
And it's not the case. We know that obviously, and I know Laura would know that and your girls would know that as well. It's not what they would see value in you for. You know, the providing of everything is not your sole task.
No.
Do you know what I mean? And it has to be in a mutual situation constantly. But I think our dad's generations and our granddad's generations, it's almost the people that can look at these in a more simplistic way are probably more open-minded to engaging in the practices.
Yep.
Because it's like they're not anchoring feminine, masculine traits to any of it. They're just saying this, I'd like to be here for as long as possible.
Yeah,
like I look at my granddad, probably a very different personality to dad. Like he'd be in... No, dad's actually floated too. That makes dad sound like a macho man. But granddad would be open to anything. Like I'm sure if he was alive, he'd probably be running around after Wim Hof and he would try anything that could make him feel good or better.
Mm.
He wouldn't think that would make him vulnerable, less
of
a man.
I've got a great photo
actually
with him just after a float, just sitting in reception.
Oh.
It's a really cool photo, but you're exactly right. He was that, you know.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about this. We're talking about... providing stability, security, consistency for a family point. But I also think it happens in leadership roles as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think, say, for example, in a business, like if you're leading a team or a group of people, maybe even on the sports field as well, like if you show weakness or show that you're not perfect or show that, you know, you need a bit of support, internally it's sort of like maybe it prevents you feel like it's showing a lack of leadership. You're not
100%.
As strong and not as easy to follow because you've got these
This was
chinks.
One of the ridiculous amount of studies that I came across in this, like looking for these statistics. And there was a huge study done on corporate leadership, so the culture that's created within a company that around well-being, essentially, so physical and mental. And it was very much that the vulnerability of a CEO or the managerial leadership culture and what they exposed to the wider company had far greater outcomes of engagement and people taking advantage of practices provided to them, whether that be to support mental or physical health.
Mm, wow.
So companies that just, you know, put on a gym membership or a wellness studio or partner, great. The engagement was lower by companies that had a culture and their managerial leadership level that showed no form of engaging in those practices themselves.
Yeah.
So it was almost like the health checks was a prime example. Is if a company's suggesting every person between these age brackets does these health checks or gets a flu vaccination or whatever it is, if the CEO comes out and tells people that he's struggled with the flu last year and it almost got him sort of thing, all of a sudden everyone's going off to get the flu vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
If he's not exposing that and he's holding that real staunch, sort of stoic, nothing's sort of breaking through this armour, the rest of the company feel like, oh my gosh, it's a sign of weakness if we're needing those practices.
Yeah,
so
I wonder if that's the same in the family as well.
Yep.
You know, like by not doing it and not embracing it, are you actually compromising your family's ability to do the same if they encounter challenges?
Yeah.
I don't know, but like the research was corporate-based.
Yeah,
but
definitely. Well, you think of the countries through Scandinavia, there's always been a huge uptake of things like, you know, sauna, cold, immersion. There's, you know, through the East, massive yeah. amounts of, it's completely crucial that you're practicing, you know, meditation, mindfulness, yeah. yoga from a very, you're exposed to that. That's their norm. Yeah. Whereas in the West, we haven't been exposed yeah. to practices that maintain or facilitate
yeah.
good mental, physical function.
Yeah,
aside from gyms.
Yeah.
So I think it would definitely would be.
Well, I think, I mean, the way I sort of like to frame this in my head is that, you know, because I want to be able to, you know, look after my family and emotionally and physically and everything, you know, I want to be able to. But I really understand that, you know, it all depends on how much I can give, all depends on what I'm putting in.
Mm.
It really, really does. And so I see this stuff as like valuable time, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I can be a better person, you know, for them, you know, and a better person for myself and everyone around me too. So I think, you know, because I don't think we're not going to easily solve the problem that a lot of men out there feel like they need to be protectors, providers, you know, providing you know, yeah. that safety for their family or friends or whatever it is, or team or whatever it is. But what I think we can chip away at slightly is that by doing this stuff, it is helping you do that better. You know,
yeah.
you talked about it before, you can't pull from a, you know, from an empty cup, but you can pull more from a more full cup. You know, we're not running around, not as if all of us are running around with full cups all the time.
Yeah.
And yeah, so if you want to be able to pull more, fill it up a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry to interrupt this episode, but I wanted to do a quick shout out to our epic sponsor of this episode. It is O-Studio. If you or someone you know around New Zealand is interested in wellness and you're wondering whether starting a business is right for you, jump online, check out ostudio.co.nz, go to the Owner Studio page, fill out the form there, join the waitlist, and we'll be in touch. Back to the show.
I'm going to steal a statement story there, just purely because I think it's relevant. Is, you know, in this, we have these conversations all the time where men come in stressed out. You can tell the story about the prime examples in a minute, but when men are in the space, they're often thinking about how this would work for their partner or their wife. It's a long story short. And I think it is, if it was a decision or a choice for both of you, who was to be left uncomfortable, you'd both choose yourselves.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think
you would too, though. And I think a lot of that's not necessary.
But that's actually where I'm going, because I think both of your partners or your daughters would also.
Yeah.
So it's almost yeah. like I think that's one thing I think
it's false.
Men really need yeah. to. But yeah. what we need to absorb is that they actually do want people.
Yeah.
No, so people do actually want to look after you. They don't just want to be looked after.
Yeah.
Like it
yeah.
is like it's. I think we've set up in a society to make men feel slightly different at the moment,
mm-hmm.
just in the way of the. You know, the actions and effort are quite different. And that's not even just a masculine feminine thing. I think there can just be like a dominance and what that's
yeah.
the expectation. Like
yeah,
I think
yeah.
of, you know, gifts as a prime example. You know, we're heading into a wedding anniversary and it would almost be sacrilege for the man not to get something for the woman.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not nearly such a big societal drama if the woman doesn't get something for the man. And I'm not saying gifts are the only act of service, but it is very much, there's much more discretion on if the action and effort isn't as intense
yeah.
by the man than if it is by the woman. And that's there's a whole lot of things we can go off into spiral about that, how we've got to that point. But as a whole, I think that would be quite a common experience for people maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. And one thing I think about, you know, this is males, but probably females as well, is that with well-being, it's really easy to be reactive.
Mm.
You know, like if something goes wrong, you know, we see people come in and they're like, oh, I've had a scare.
Mm.
You know, and you see it in the fitness world as well. Like if someone's injured themselves and all of a sudden they've got to like strengthen their knee so they can have the operation, or strengthen the leg so they can have an operation. They come into the gym or they come into a studio like this and they work really hard so they can go and they're reacting to an issue.
Mm.
But the reality is, if you went to the gym and had strong legs in the first place, you probably would have reduced the likelihood of you doing your knee in.
Yeah.
And same kind of thing at a place like O-Studio. It's like when someone encounters some adversity or a serious challenge in their life, something that, you know, challenges their identity of being mm-hmm. able to provide, it's like, well then, like, gosh, I've got to do something, you know.
Yeah.
But the reality is, if you were actually, you know, proactive about that and doing things that, you know, helped build resilience and look after your well-being and look after your ability to show up in whatever area you're trying to do, you're probably far less likely to actually find yourself in that situation.
Absolutely. Mm. And one of the onerous ones out of that, I think, is stress. Mm-hmm. Like men allowing themselves to get to points of extreme stress for these reasons. There's a pressure and a fear around not being able to provide enough support, you know, security, mm-hmm. the big ones. But we know that stress is such a huge, it's a killer, but yeah. it also is incredibly impacts on your ability to be happy.
Yeah.
And there was lots of parts of this that were making me feel petrified and upset just around, I don't want any of the men I currently know to get to 67 until they actually allow themselves to be happy or yeah. free of a preconceived pressure.
Burden, yeah.
And still living with a fear,
yeah.
it's very much like the sooner we can help, mm-hmm. you know, move those thoughts
yes.
to actually, you deserve to be happy,
yeah.
you deserve to be looked after, and you deserve to feel supported.
Yeah,
like that's pretty much where I got to with that.
Yeah.
And I'd hope that we can all find actions that we can do to help mm-hmm. move that needle.
Yeah,
that is another one. I think you've touched on another one there that a lot of people I know would resonate with. A lot of guys would resonate. I know it's like that. It's a finite life. You got one chance here. You know, you don't want to live it in a way that's not full. You know, and full in every sense of the word. You know, family and relationship, opportunity, everything. And so, being happy is a huge part of that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What's the point if you're not enjoying the process?
Yeah.
And so, you know, being healthy is another huge part of that. It's not until you lose your health that you realise actually that's something that's really, really important.
Yeah,
so, like, I think understanding, I suppose, is what I'm getting at, that understanding that you've got one chance, and what you put in, you're going to get out.
Yeah.
That is something that helps move the needle slightly. But the needle's still well off.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
The
needle's
is.
Yeah, when you look at those stats, it is, right?
It really is.
Yeah. The stats, particularly around suicide, because that's obviously the most drastic form mm-hmm. of, you know, an implication of a thinking pattern.
Yeah.
One
thing I was also thinking that prevents people in this area is like the action and consequence are really far removed from each other. You know, it's like you can liken it to anything. Like if you looked at smoking, right, like everyone knows that by smoking a cigarette, you are killing yourself, all right? But the issue is that you're not killing yourself now. You're killing yourself in 40, 50, 60 years. That's when your lungs give out, right? If you smoked a cigarette and died instantly, people wouldn't do it, right? Because the action and consequences are immediate. And I think the same's with health and well-being, right? You don't really, particularly around stress, you know, like the benefits there might be some benefits immediately, but the consequence of not doing it might not be, aren't right now. Like you're not going to have, touch wood, not going to have a heart attack right now, you know? You're not going to, you know, you're not having an aneurysm right now.
Yeah.
Probably not, at least anyway.
Yeah.
But if this continues, this behavior continues, then there will be a consequence of it further down the line. But that consequence is too far removed from the action or inaction, not doing the thing, that I think it's hard to correlate those things in our head, that by not doing this, I'm going to die sooner.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other consequence of not addressing this as soon as possible, I think, you know, whether that's we're working on Moss at 10 years old to make sure he's building this, you know, thinking that's aligned with what we're kind of discussing now. So Moss is 10, obviously, right through. So dad is not waiting too long. And we spoke about this the other day around, you know, your life, your one life. You either, the story is written about you or you write the story, pretty much. And I think so often people are getting to the end of, you know, the last sort of third of a lifetime before they actually think, shit, I've been a kind of like a bystander in my whole lemon story. You know, the story's been written out of reactive pressure, fear, joy, happiness, spontaneous decisions, and I've done the things I've done, and that's it. There's not a conscious awareness of what they're doing.
Yeah.
There was a survey done with a whole lot of nurses internationally, and they spoke about the final sort of thoughts of people before they passed away. And when I was reading them, I was thinking, this is exactly why now is the right time, whether you're 86 or you're 6, making sure that you're open to these practices of being supported and, you know, showing yourself kindness and love and giving yourself a chance to write your own story. So the first, the regrets actually, so the people, things that people regretted in their last moments. The first one was, I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. I can already hear and feel that from, you know, people I know in their later years. Second, I wish I hadn't worked so hard. So this isn't that we don't want to work hard. It's so hard. You know, like finding that balance, finding your balance metrics of engaging in your life or just working to build it before it's gone. The third one, I wish I'd had the courage to express my feelings. You know, so people regretting on their deathbed that they haven't had the ability to express their feelings. Like, I'm speaking broadly as a woman, I'm sure there's lots of women that hold their feelings, but I just could not comprehend that. I can't imagine, you know, having feelings that I can't express because I feel like the fear and the implications of expressing them is dangerous. Fourth, I wish I'd stayed in touch with friends. And this one resonated a lot in the sense of when I was looking at this sort of male statistics is, you know, that window of the high suicide rates being just fresh out of school, speaking to Elizabeth around like the social changes of leaving school and moving into university and just that void of loneliness that's often created around, you know, men and women, girls and boys, but it's definitely heightened in men because it's very much a pack sensation. I know loneliness exists, but, you know, with all the other things, the pressures that we know, I think friends is kind of that anchor back to a true self. Often your friends will call you out. They'll know how you were when you're free of pressure. So that made me feel, sad and conscious of that. Five, I wish that I had let myself be happier. And that one, I was like, oh my gosh, it's actually a permission thing. You know, do we need to make sure that all men know they have permission to be happy? And that doesn't make them, you know, weak or selfish or less masculine. That is a basic human right.
Are we saying in here there's anything wrong with being masculine?
No, I think, it's funny, we've just had Nathan Mollison and he's spoken about, you know, the mosaic of masculine and feminine traits. And it's very much that I don't think it's about being masculine, first and foremost. It's just about a preconceived idea of what it means to be a provider. And I think we've moved exponentially from the 50s and that we know that there's equal income households and there's all types of incredible things that have happened in the world of equality. But what we're saying is the part that is not equal are the stats around men's mental health. You know, as equality has risen, it got closer in other areas. This is something that I feel like, or as a female of with lots of men that I love, it's almost something that wasn't on my radar of things that I could be facilitating. What can I be doing to make sure that we're reaching out to these groups that are showing the most frightening statistics? Just like we would if there was a statistic for women that was exponentially higher. I mean, 3 times more likely to commit suicide is the stat there. So it's not like it's just like, you know, a tiny bit, it's a lot.
Yeah, because I think the more I hear you talk like this as well, it's like, you know, because being capable for men is really important, you know, and that's the, once again, we're looking societal wide here, being capable is very important to find a partner. And this is just really genuinely speaking again, but, you know, females generally marry across on and up in terms of capabilities or the socioeconomic spectrum, just genuinely speaking, once again, I know this is, but that is what it is. And so like, men need to feel capable and need to feel confident. Not confident, confidence is not the right word, but capable. You know, and so like, and so
anything but not just that, they need to feel capable. They actually do need to be capable.
They need to be capable. You know what I mean? And like, you look at, once again, these statistics around this later. I know they looked at Tinder and they looked at swipes, you know, people that looked more capable and confident and with their stuff together got exponentially more swipes than not. You know what I mean? And so, and that's female towards male, you know? And so that's a normal thing. It's nothing. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just what's out there. But the core part of this is, does engaging in practices like this, you know, chip away at your capability? Does it chip away at your, you know, does it chip away at that, whatever that is that's been built around there? Because I think a lot of people perceive it too.
It chip does,
away
at
it. It makes, and it's really easy to just throw away. It doesn't make you weak. It doesn't make you soft. It doesn't make this, but does it?
Well, you know, I think, like, I did think of a solution to this. Because I've heard comments of men that come here say to them, you know, workmates, someone else has made a comment about doing yoga and making them feel like it wasn't overly masculine. And thankfully, the legends that come here were just like, he's a dick. But I'm conscious that this is a barrier. You know, people like me is a big reason why people come to a place like O Studio. And so if they're thinking that's primarily women, that's not like me, this is a not for me. So it's a very simple reason. But I think the biggest thing is if you were to ask loved ones that aren't men, what is it they would value in your character? I wonder if you'd get the answers you thought you were going to get. So I think everybody that would care about you would tell you they would want you to be as happy as possible, as mentally secure as possible. They'd want you to feel loved. They'd want you to be healthy. They'd want you to live a long life and be part of their life for as long as possible. They're all things that are conducive with health and well-being.
And what could that look like? You know, because, you know, if you, you know, how do you talk to Will? So, you know what I mean? Like, what does that look like at a practical level?
I think it looks at a practical level like we're equally both supporting things that we know that would bring happiness to each other.
Mm.
And so for me, I'd know if he's getting good sunlight, he's sleeping well, he's hydrating, you know, he's doing, he loves obviously sauna and ice and he loves yoga. So it's very much, I'm probably biased to how approachable this industry is. He's also what I would perceive as very masculine. I don't think look at him and think of weak or vulnerability or anything that, you know, with the stats show would be a barrier for engaging in those sorts of practices. But I also think that comes from an internal security in himself that he knows what Maddie was talking about previously. It's that sort of, you know, cause and effect. He knows that this is actually benefiting who he is as a dad, as a partner, as a son, as a friend or a teammate or a whatever it is. So I think he actually has almost, he's been sucked into the circle and he understands now that it absolutely is. It's not anything that's outside of the normal for someone like him.
Do you think it makes him a better dad?
100%. Like I think we can all agree. Like I know myself, if you're engaging in things that look after your mental and physical health, you're going to be more high functioning in every area, whether that's parenting, partnership, you know, work, whatever it is. It's that they're not things that I think have been questioned. I think it is very much that, you know, men at any age are thinking industries like this are created to support and care for women. It's an extension of what they're trying to do already for those women in their lives. You know, please tell that story about the man that came in the other day.
I will tell that shortly. One thing, I guess, on this as well is like we've tried to do that with O Studio. Like if I think about the way we've tried to do our colours, our branding, our messaging, we're trying to make it approach as approachable as possible to men. That's what we've tried to do.
Yeah.
You know, and that's been a very conscious decision. And so I hope that when there's men out there that look at something like this and think, actually, that's something that is a place that I could step into, for sure.
Yeah,
like, just on that story, like, and this happens regularly, this is not a one-off story. And so I caught up for, a guy reached out to me via LinkedIn, military background, you know, the classic guy that you can just see in your head now when you're thinking of military, like, professional out there doing, you know, getting stuff done. And he's going through some struggle, he's going through some stuff, you know. We had a great catch up, you know, 45 minutes downstairs, just chatting about all sorts of different stuff. And then he was like, what is it you're doing up there? You know, so I took him up through our studio, showed him around, showed him the float, and we're talking about what, you know, I talked about how it was impacting me and, you know, those types of things. And he was like, oh, yeah, I've got to get my wife something from here. That was his thing. That was, that wasn't like the first thing he thought of. He just talked about his challenges and his struggles mentally and looking after himself. And and I take him through the space and the first thing he says is, oh, I've got to get my wife something from here.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
she's more deserving.
It's great. I'd love him to get something for his wife because she probably needs something too.
Yeah.
You know, but I was like, there was just a little part of me that was like, mate, like you need something too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So, like, I mean, we come to this point now, like we've identified these horrible stats. We've sort of tried to drill down into why that is and why that's, you know, happening. But like, what do we do? Is the answer. What do people do? You know, and, you know, I think there's Nathan Wallace talked a lot about culture versus research. You know, it was quite interesting. He's like, you know, that even though the research might and science and evidence might tell us something really, really strongly, we'll still go against that for cultural reasons.
Yeah.
You know, like in his, you know, his world is about the developing brain in kids, and he's all just like, the best chance you can give your child to earn the most money in a career is to have a parent stay at home with them in the first year of their life. He said, that's science, it's evidence, there's nothing, no one is disputing that. It's clear as day. Yet everyone will take money and try and send their kids to a private school.
Yeah.
And that's what culture is, that they think that, well, that's going to give them the more, even though the Evanson is saying the opposite, go to any high school you want as long as the parent stays at home. Mm. And I think that's sort of what we're looking at here. Like, no one's disputing these figures.
No.
No one's challenging the reality of what men are facing, but the culture is doing nothing about it.
Yeah.
And so maybe the question is not what do we do, but like,
how do we change the culture?
How do we change culture? And my, you know, right or wrongly, I believe in individual responsibility. You know, I think, how do you change this? It's like, well, you start by changing yourself. You know, if this is important to you and there's things that you can do, like, you do it, you know, and you find some way to be secure about that, like Will is, you know, and you're like, and then when someone asks you about it, you don't try and
minimize
it, push it off, or like, oh no, it's just something, like, you know, like, it's like, no, I do it, like, yeah, you should come and try it with me, you know, like, it's like, and then maybe they do, or maybe they don't, or maybe in a year they do it, or maybe someone else have the same conversation, they end up having a conversation with five different people, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, well, you know, maybe this is something that's happening, and people are around me are doing this, and they start to do that, and then, you know, maybe you convince dad to have a go, and maybe it might be little things. It doesn't necessarily mean coming and doing a yoga class, you know. It might be drinking bloody water,
yeah,
you know. But it's a fucking start,
yeah, it is,
you know. And I think that's why you look at a challenge like this and trying to change culture. It's ginormous.
Yeah.
It's an insurmountable mountain for an individual. But what you can change is you and your behaviour. And if you do that, just maybe someone else might come along with you. And if everyone thinks like that, I think you get to the point where hopefully things have changed.
100%. I think that the follow-up onto that is supporting people that are doing that.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a guy or a girl and a guy you know is engaging in anything to increase how well he is, that's such a normal thing. So whether that's physical or mental, don't be a dick. Like, be supportive. Don't be belittling. Don't bring out your own insecurities on that person. See it for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to live happier and healthier.
Yeah.
It's not something to be a dick about.
What about from, like, what do you think from a female point of view? What could a female do to support?
I think really think about how it is we talk about this type of thing. Like, I think if, you know, if you've got a son, if you've got a dad, brothers, aunt, whatever it is, guys in the friendship group, make sure that they feel welcome in that thinking. I'm not even thinking space. I'm the same as you. It's hydrating, fresh air, the right to be happy, the right to feel supported. I think really pushing those conversations is really important, making sure that we don't go voids of years where the men that we care about don't know that, I think, is probably my biggest takeaway from all of this.
Yeah, and maybe just talking about it, like this conversation, you know, like hopefully this has helped, you know, like it's really opened my eyes a lot to it. I didn't even think about this stuff. And I think, you know, like maybe this episode has helped someone else and maybe they can share it with their dad, or, you know, if a female's listening, they can go, this has given me a different perspective on things. And I think that, you know, maybe if I think I'm talking about individual responsibility, we're talking about action, but maybe the step before action is actually conversation, is talking and thinking about it. And I think the honest answer is that we kind of don't know.
Yeah.
You know, the answer, and hopefully this conversation will help, because, you know, no one is downplaying the importance that we all want. We all need, you know, our dads, our brothers, our mates, our husbands, our sons to be happy, healthy, strong people that are with us for a long time. And, so we need to do something, and what? Like, maybe we've given some tips. I hope so, but you know, I think we have to try. We have to consciously think about it and take a small step, and that's probably
see where it goes. Yeah. Reach out to the men in your life, share that we're desiring for that quality of love and support and happiness.
Yeah. I'd honestly love to hear from people. You know, in this, you know, this is something we don't know. I'd love for someone to, like, if you've got some little gem, you know, or something that you've seen help a brother or a husband or a father or, you know, or a mate, you know, like, send it through. Like, this is, we're all learning.
Yeah.
We're all learning. And we all want the same thing, just as you've spoken about. We all want the same thing. And, you know, the more we can talk about it, the more we can understand it and be genuine with it too, not just flippantly, hey, just go and engage with it. What are you doing, mate? You know, we've got to understand that there are real barriers there that we've got to sort of breakthrough and understanding is what's going to get us there.
Yeah. And if nothing else, I just hope this conversation has helped. Thanks for listening.
Thanks so much for listening to another episode of the O Studio podcast.
If you like this podcast, there are two things you can do to help us out. The first is to click on the follow button wherever you are listening. And the second is to jump on social media and follow us at O Studio Global. We've just launched new pages there, so we've got some growing to do. If you could do that for us, that would mean so much. Our purpose at O Studio is to make holistic wellness as accepted, as understood, and as practiced as physical fitness. To achieve this, we're building premium wellness hubs around New Zealand where communities come together to do things like sauna, ice bath, yoga, Pilates, meditation, flotation therapy, massage, recovery, and so much more in beautiful and normal environments with everyday people. If you want to join us on this journey, come and visit us at a location near you. Visit ostudio.co.nz for all the details. Own the moment.